welcome to Girls on the Piste, your weekly ski fix with Bella Syme and...
Oh my goodness!
Welcome to Girls on the Piste, your weekly ski fix with Bella Syme and me, Emma Woodward.
This week, we speak to four times Olympian and Ski Sunday presenter Shemi Alcott. We talk powder days, women in skiing, fitness and how it's all going out in Larks presenting Ski Sunday.
Yes, and we get all the updates from two of the most exciting and contrasting events in the winter sports calendar, the Larks Open and the Strife Downhill in Kitzbühel, which have both been taking place over the last few days.
We will also very excitingly be talking to Andy Bennett, five times British freestyle champion and now GB freestyle coach. We talk moguls, half pipes and everything freestyle, as well as ski modelling and the jump.
We also give you some fun freestyle facts before we speak to him, for those of us not in the know.
Find out why Emma can't pronounce the Heineken. I don't even know if I can.
Oh, you said that the same as me.
Did I? The Heineken.
The Heineken.
That is funny. Learn how to pretend drink with Shemi and hear what Andy holds a Guinness World Record for.
And lastly, we'll run through what's happened in the Alps this week news-wise.
I have just stopped painting. Ems, I am actually now in awe of painters, like builder painters.
What are you painting?
So Rupert went all DIY on me and started panelling the downstairs loo.
Oh, so actually painting the house, not painting a picture.
Oh, yes, exactly. Like, I am so bad at art. So I was in the downstairs loo. He said, right, I've done the DIY, fitting the panelling. You can do the painting. I thought, oh, that's quite fun. Got all my paints, did some research online. I'm not joking. I've done five layers. And he's like, you need another layer. I keep layering again because it keeps, every time I layer, there's marks. Then he's like, oh, you just need another layer. I'm like, no, I do not need another layer. I've done too many already, but we can't get the, anyway, boring. Okay. But I can't, it just doesn't look good. You know what I mean?
I'm very impressed. What colour are you doing?
We're going for a very sort of dark green.
Not rainbows.
Exactly. Oh. Well, if it had been my choice, I'd have 100% gone like neon orange or something. And also, just finished Bridgerton last night.
Oh my God, it's so good, isn't it?
I'm obsessed with the Duke of Hastings.
He is hot. I've seen there's a whole Instagram page and it's called The Duke's Spoon, for that scene when he's like licking the spoon.
Oh my God, stop it. No.
Like thousands of followers.
Oh my God, I'm going to have a look. That is too funny. Right, okay, we're totally off script, Ems. Hello everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in. We've had another wild week in lockdown. Today we have Shemi Alcott joining us, my good friend and ski fanatic. So as a four times Winter Olympian, a career high of ranking of 8th in the world, 7 times British national overall champion, and the only British female skier to ever win a run in a World Cup, Shemi Alcott is widely regarded as one of Britain's greatest ever skiers. In a time where competing at a Winter Olympics was unusual for a British athlete, Shemi defied the odds and pioneered a skiing movement that has inspired a generation. Shemi now presents for the BBC on Ski Sunday and commentates on the World Cup Ski Series for Eurosport, as well as being a guest on many other shows. Welcome, Shem.
Yes, hi, Shemi.
Hello, Louise. How great that we are three women doing a snow sport podcast.
It's amazing to have caught you mid-filming. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, no worries. I'm absolutely buzzing. I had a really good day today, out of my comfort zone, raised my bar, but I really enjoyed it.
What have you been up to today?
So obviously everyone sees me as kind of like the mouthpiece, and I stand there on Sundays and I talk. But because of the situation out here with the Ski Sunday team and the fact that our whole team is in the UK, it's just the other presenter, Ed, the cameraman, Zoid, and me. We're all in our own apartments. We're not allowed to have dinner together. We're in singular bubbles. And actually, Ed and I are kind of important, but Zoe, the cameraman, because he's such a legend, he's most important. He's irreplaceable, whereas we are. But yeah, so you all see me doing that, and that's great. But today I got to kind of produce a feature a little bit. And there's this young British snowboarder called Mia Brooks, and she's 14, and she's incredible. And she's like the next big thing. And there's this big buzz around her.
Oh, wow.
And we happen to be here, and the Larks opens on. And I have a friend, my one friend in international snowboarding is Jamie Anderson, who happens to be like the pioneer of snowboarding for female athletes, absolutely raising the bar the whole time. And yesterday she's like, oh, it's really cool you're doing this. If I can help in any way, it was a completely throwaway comment. So then I called her last night and I'm like, hey, how about you ride with this 14-year-old called Mia and do a feature and you can present it? Because obviously we've got amazing female riders in the UK. We've got Jenny Jones we work with and Amy Fuller with Ski Sunday, but it's really hard to get anyone here. And we wanted a female athlete to ride with Mia, and at snowboarding. And Jamie said yes, and Mia was just like, she's my idol. And Jamie introduced Mia a note, like a handwritten note for inspiration that she'd written for her. And it was just, it was wicked. It was unbelievable. And I'm so high on life because I didn't know what to do as a producer. I do not have skills like that at all. But you just, sometimes you just got to jump in and go, you know, I'm a fan of snow sports. What do I want to see?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's amazing.
That's awesome. That's so cool. But you're always buzzy. You're always full of energy. I always admire your energy.
I mean, I'm very lucky, Bells. Like, we have a very similar energy. My energy is probably shining a bit more because I'm out here in the mountains, and I know it's where so many people want to be. And I feel so much gratitude that this has happened. And I just got really lucky. If I had been in the UK for Christmas, if I'd gone home for Christmas, I wouldn't be on the road. The fact is, the boys flew in from New Zealand, so it's safer for them to come to Switzerland, and I was already here. So, I mean, I just got so lucky, and it's just great to go out there. I'm doing the freestyle thing. I want to get a lesson.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw your Instagram yesterday.
It's running Larks. It's quite a famous run for all the like cool people called P6.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's called that. I should find out. And every day I go on it for a couple of runs of training. And so far I can do all the boxes. I can go across a table. Oh my God, the rails just petrify me. But I'm also doing it on my slalom race ski. Like, I don't have a bendy flex to print it.
But no, I mean, when we were skiing, whenever we're skiing out and about, okay, so this is what I can tell our listeners about Shemi. We are, okay, this is how good her energy is. We'll be in folly deuce. We're not drinking because we're working. All our clients
are... We're pretend drinking.
Well, we're pretend
drink when you're hosting. This is a top tip for anyone who goes, oh, how are those girls still being able to ski down? You just pretend drink. You take a shot, then you have a beer, a green beer, and you put the shot in your mouth, you keep it in your mouth, and then you spit it into the beer after. And everyone's like, oh my God, they're wild and legless. And then you've still got completely it together. You can take care of your clients. You can deliver things properly. Boom.
Boom.
Tip.
Exactly. See, that is basically Shemi's what she taught me to do. And so there we are, like, pretend drinking. I mean, you wouldn't believe Shemi hadn't drunk. She's like, getting me up on the table. We're dancing as if we're in like proper apres. You'd never know.
We even did stage dives off the roof. Do you remember?
Oh my God, what insane.
Actually, I think I was a little bit pregnant at the time, but I couldn't tell anyone, you know, that early phase. So I was doing a lot of pretend drinking. And then I was like, oh, but I've got to still be fun. You know, there's a pressure.
The crowd surfing. Yes, the crowd surfing. That's so true. I forgot about that. But anyway, I admire how you can always put on such a mega performance when you're not drinking. It's very impressive. Sorry, Ems.
No, Shemi, we're seriously envious of you being out there in the mountains, but yeah, we're completely living it through you, and it's just making us so happy to be able to watch everything going on out there. So yeah, thank you. And it's just great that you made the setup work. So it's a big week this week. As Ed said, it's a snow sports mashup that we can't wait for, with two very contrasting events. We've got the biggest ski race in the world, the Heineken World Cup, which starts today through to Saturday, as well as the Larks Open.
Ems, that sounded like you said the Heineken World Cup. On a normal year, probably is. The Heineken, it's a very hard word for us Brits to say. The Kitzbühel.
Okay, that's getting edited out.
No, that's okay.
No, it's brilliant, Ems. I think that's so funny that it's Heineken, Harneken,
Heineken's get drunk there.
Anyway,
so that's going on, as well as the Larks Open, which is Europe's biggest snowboarding competition. Can you tell us a bit more about what's going on out there? Any predictions from your side? Well, the Harnikan World Cups is held in Kitzbühel, for those who don't know. It's one of the most notorious downhill race courses for men called the Strife. So have you got anyone who's on your radar? Any exciting predictions?
On the Strife in Kitzbühel, I actually did an interview with Dominic Paris this week, who's this kind of crazy Italian, amazing energy, so loose when he skis, always on the limit, always on the edge. Unbelievably, he smiles the whole time. Like, he's telling you these mad stories about death-defying stunts, and he's smiling, you know, like a giddy little... It's just like such a crazy thing to feel someone's personality when you think they're a bit of a superhero, that you think they're invincible. But actually, when they deliver the stories personally, you get so much more vulnerability from them. He's not done great in the first training run. I haven't checked today's training run, but Ryan Cochran-Siegel is... He's kind of the new Bodie Miller, an American skier. He swarmed to victory in Bormio. And actually, Bormio is quite a similar... We obviously didn't get Wengen last week. So Bormio is the other big one where it's bumpy and dark. So if you can ski well in Bormio, you're technically great. Your tactics are great. And that's kind of what Kitzbühel is. That's why it's the biggest test for these men, because you can't just be a good skier. You have to have amazing tactics. You've got to have the balls to go as close to the net as you can without hitting it, or like Bodie Miller did back in the day, completely ride the net. So I think it's the biggest test for them. And actually, if you ask 50% of the guys racing if they could win Kitzbühel or they could win the Olympics, half of them will say a World Cup in Kitzbühel, because it's so notorious for defining you. You get this huge gondola named after you, and there's a big ceremony in the summer.
Oh, wow.
And I have to say, I think Ryan Cochran-Siegel's got a great backstory. His parents have their own ski field in their house, a rope tow at the back. They've had four kids going to the Olympics. His mum was a World Cup winner back in slalom. And he's taken a long time to be as good as he is now. He's had some horrendous injuries, and he's just skiing so wild and free, but with an amazing foundation of building that turn at top of, with gravity. So I'm going to say him, actually. I think the Austrians will always be in there. But I think without the crowds, it's anyone's to win.
And okay, so moving on to the Larks Open, I know it's only snowboarders, isn't it?
It's only snowboarders, but there's two events. Yeah. It's slopestyle and halfpipe. And the halfpipe is a superpipe. And I cannot tell you how big it is. It's
really
so huge. Like, I've seen half pipes my whole life, but I have never, and this is the world's biggest half pipe. And it's,
oh my God.
It's just, I stood on the side and I was like, I actually feel a little bit sick. And I know that, you know, I'm pretty confident with being crazy, but actually quite embarrassingly, a few days ago, we were up there doing links, and the links were for the show for Kitzbühel and for the Larks Open. So I brought my really stiff, long Super G ski up for Ed to show. Because, you know, when you're watching Kitzbühel and there's a traverse, they just look like wobbly bits of pasta going along. So basically, we were showing that. And then we had to go and do the links on the snowboarding next to the half pipe. And so this week, I wanted to look a bit cool. I wanted to look a bit younger. So I'm wearing this like completely freestyle camo outfit, which no 38-year-old woman can get away with. But I'm just trying. I'm going for it.
I saw it on Instagram. It looked amazing.
I've got like a big easy goggle. I've got the whole look going on. And I'm standing there and they're like, right, can you just go to the side of the pipe and we'll film this link? But I'm wearing my Super G skis. Like, I look like the biggest idiot in the world. I'm surrounded by freestylers trying to look like a freestyler. And then I have these skis that just go on and on and on. And I can't do anything with them on. I'm like Bambi, like crossing them over. I just look, anyway, I gave everyone a nice laugh. So, you know, I'm really getting into, I guess it's because I'm based in Larks right now and it's one of the freestyle capitals of the world. They have such an amazing learning slope progression for freestylers. So like we have, what do we have? Green runs, blue runs, red runs, black runs, and double diamonds where if you're in the stateside. But here they've got that with all the freestyle elements and the skills. So they've got little tabletops for learning. And
that's amazing.
The big one. So it's really nice. So I'm actually going to get a lesson. I'm going to get my first ski lesson for, I don't know, a long time. And I'm going to go and have a freestyle ski lesson because I want to be better at it. I know that I've got good balance, but I have no clue what to do.
That sounds awesome. Well, I can't wait to see. And how has the powder been? I saw you also had a powder day.
Oh my God.
I mean, just, you can't
so
see
jealous.
Me about this because I almost
it's
had
actually,
to unfollow
it was actually, you. It was actually too heavy. There was too much.
Just shut up.
The first run we went up there and we went up with some snowboarders. And I found another skier to hang out with. And we were having to dig. We had to go first all the time to pull the snowboarders out, We were actually, I felt a bit used. I've never felt like that before, but it was so heavy. It was like up to the waist and it was just kept stopping.
Oh, really?
So it was actually better when it got tracked out, which I would never normally say. But I was choking on the powder bells. Like literally, you'd have loved it.
Oh.
I was like, the video that I put on my Instagram, I had to put a song on it because I sound like I'm coughing, and obviously no one can have a cough right now because of COVID.
This
was a powder choking on snow cough
moment. you know how jealous I am. You know what? This week on my Facebook, which I never go on anymore, it popped up one of your GoPro videos of us skiing in Verbier. Did you get that?
Yeah.
And it was you with your GoPro. And I was behind you. Anyway, I was like, that was 5 years ago this week.
That's crazy, isn't it? But I remember those days. That's how good, that's what powder days do. Like I can tell you I've had some amazing days in my life on the piste, but I can't isolate them. Whereas powder days, you get this incredible like emotion of gratitude, and you know that you're being special and you have to work hard for it. You have to find the right line. And I can remember every single one of my best powder days.
Yeah, me too. It's so true.
So Shemi, so fitness, we've been following your fitness journey and we are, well, mega impressed. Love the kitchen exercises you were recommending last week on Ski Sunday. Been trying that. How are you keeping fit while you're out there filming with the restrictions? And you've got any top tips for at-home fitness while we're stuck here in lockdown?
So I have to say, I think at the end of the first lockdown in the UK, I was doing loads of fitness on Zoom with athletes and with kids I mentor, with the ski club. We had 100 people signing in every Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
And I saw. Amazing.
I did my first lockdown more fit than I'd ever been. And I wasn't going to the gym. I was being super time efficient. I was understanding what my body needed. But I was doing HIIT workouts too often. So yeah. I permanently quite tired from my muscles. And out here, the first day I got here, Ed Lee, my co-presenter, is amazingly super flexible, really into his yoga. He's married to a yoga instructor. And he said, oh, have you ever heard of this Glow app? And it's basically a yoga. It has got fitness on it as well, a meditation app. And I signed up for 15 free days. And I've been loving it because Bells will tell you, I'm never alone. I'm not a good alone person.
Yeah.
I like to talk. I'm very social. And now I'm in this bubble where I'm in my room all the time and I don't want to be scrolling on my phone. I know that's not healthy for me.
Yeah.
So I'm making myself. And that first week I was here, I did about 2 hours of yoga every day.
Wow.
Warm up yoga. And I was skiing so well afterwards. I was doing recovery yoga. And in the evening, I've also got my bike here. I happened to put it in the van when I was leaving the UK, a static bike, which I haven't used ever. And then I got here and I was like, oh, this is great. So anytime I'm watching TV, I go on the bike. I really like sweating. I love yoga, but I also like to sweat. I feel like I have to release and everything. But normally I'm really into like resistance works out when I lost all that weight last year. So a bit of backstory with me and fitness in retirement, because obviously when you're a professional athlete, that's what you do. You do fitness. You're going to be strong and fit and healthy. But when I retired, I had two kids within 2 years. And after my second baby, after Cooper was born, I went back to work. Within 2 weeks, I was on Ski Sunday at World Champs. And
I remember that.
I worked that whole season and I was so tired breastfeeding that I would just eat sugar. Because when you're breastfeeding, you can't have that much caffeine, which is, as Bells knows, my love. I might not drink, but I have lots of coffee a day. Yeah. That's my thing. And when you're breastfeeding, you can't have that much. So the only thing I was like, right, I need energy. I was
sugar
taking
hit.
Food and sugar. Like, and I finished that season 83 kilos. So I finished, and that's really big for, I'm 170 centimeters. So I definitely wasn't confident looking back in the mirror. And then I messaged my friend Sarah Lindsay, who's a triple Olympian in speed skating. And we'd worked together on the Olympics last year in Pyeongchang. And she actually lives opposite me. And I said to her, look, I need some help. I've got really low self-confidence. And I think I have enough self-confidence to actually reach out and ask for help. A lot of people don't, and they just try and do it themselves. And actually, sometimes you just need someone to write a program out, to send you a nutrition program, just to get the ball started.
Yeah.
Especially for someone like you who actually knows how to do it themselves.
Exactly.
Often people wouldn't ask out, which is awesome that you then could work together.
Yeah. Yeah, like I know about fitness. I did 4 Olympics. That's 20 years of being an athlete, and I know what I need to do. Mm. But I just needed to be told, and it was a different phase of my life. And basically, she stopped me having sugar. For the first 10 days, I went crazy. I was a witch.
I've tried that once. It is hard, like headaches.
Message her and go, come on, there must be a cheat food. Like, what cheat food is okay? And she's like, no. She let me have this low sugar vanilla almond milk if I had to have something. That's what I suppressed my sugar craving.
I remember when you told me that story. You were like, Bells, I went to Cash and Carry and had like a crate of a whole cupboard of chocolate bars. I can't remember what they were. And you thought at the end of the season or the winter, Dougie had been eating them too. And he was like, I haven't had one.
Oh no, oh my God. No, it's really bad.
What was that?
I went for Cadbury's cream eggs. I bought it for my son's for Lockie's 3rd birthday, and Cooper was born 3 days after. And I bought it from Costco, and I got a box of 60 Cadbury's cream eggs. 60.
That was it.
Okay. And then I put them on top of the cupboard. And, you know, I knew I'd eaten a few. And then I got back in May, and I was like, I was putting my hand in. I couldn't feel anything. I thought, oh, the box must have broken. They must be falling back in the cupboard. So I'm getting like a ladder, and I'm looking in there going, where are they? And then that evening, I'm like, Dougie, how many are those Cadbury's cream eggs from Lockie's birthday? Did you eat? And he's like, oh, where were they? I don't know where they were. And I realized that I had eaten 60. And Sarah said to me, the worst chocolate in the world, Cadbury's cream egg.
Is it?
No.
Yeah.
Why?
Do you know
just
what
they're a little bit sugary?
Yeah, that is so, I mean, I can totally relate to that because I am such a sugar addict. So yeah, I mean, but I just love that story.
60 Cadbury's cream eggs.
60.
I know.
Oh my gosh. I ate them all on my anyway, so there was a reason why I was 83 kilos.
No. But I mean, look, yeah. When I stopped doing seasons and came back to the UK, exactly the same. I mean, yeah. I just had this terrible time with sugar.
But anyway, so I went on a big overhaul and I did 3 months of it. And then now I've got this really happy medium of I can treat myself. I can have a glass of red wine. I can have gin and tonics. Yes. I'm very much all or nothing normally. And now I don't know. I'm at a really neutral level with my diet and fitness. I don't have to. I'm not training for an Ironman, but I'm also doing enough to keep me healthy and ticking along. And it's so important for endorphins. Like I actually train. I'd say I train 80% for the mental gain and the happiness that it gives me, as opposed to.
Okay, so Shem, yesterday it was 6 years since Lindsay Vonn set the world record for most podium wins by a woman. Do you think skiing is still a very male-dominated sport?
I think having icons like Lindsay Vonn, Michaela Schifrin pushing the boundaries of female sport has really helped change that perception over the last few years. I don't think it's got to where it needs to be, but I think young girls can look and think, hey, if I set my heart to this goal, I can make a career out of it and I can be the best regardless of the sex that I am. And I think that's really, really important. I think having those leaders in the sport really helps that. I remember growing up with Lindsay, and actually when we were really young, lots of the girls would shave their heads and try and walk like men. And I was like, why?
Really?
In order to be successful in an adrenaline dangerous sport, then they should act macho like a man because they would perform better. And it was really hard because that's not who we all were. And I could see it's not who they were either. And then we had Julia Mancuso and Lindsay Vonn, who were these, you know, super attractive girls going, you know what, I'm going to get up and I'm going to put eyeliner on and I'm going to ski at 90 miles an hour. And you're not going to dictate how I need to hold myself to be good in this sport.
And I always remember when you were racing, you know, you always had your pink helmet. And I just loved that. It was you and it was, yeah, I'm pink and I'm a girl. Hell yeah. And I'm fucking smashing this run.
Still like that. Like, because now I work in TV and I wear makeup and, you know, I look sometimes dolled up. I do see people raising their eyebrows at me thinking, oh, she's just, you know, a voice bot.
Some hot blonde that can't ski.
And then I go and cut them up at like 60 miles an hour and I have no shame doing it, going, hey, you just judge me. Look, don't do that.
Oh, I feel you. P.S. I'm loving your t-shirt you're wearing today with the...
So I wore this for Belle. So I have never, I've never seen Bella not wearing colour, except for now. It's making me a bit worried. We'll go to events. She'll have like one fluorescent pink hoop in and one like yellow palm tree coming out the other like out there. And I was like, oh, I'm doing this podcast for you guys. I got to put on my brightest thing I've got.
Yeah, Belle's loves the rainbow. So Shebby, last question that we ask all our guests, if you could teleport anywhere in the world right now to ski, where would you go?
I've just seen how good it looks in Japan. Have you guys seen?
This is what Graham said as well. Same answer from Graham.
Well, it's because this is, Japan's a kind of funny place because all we think about it is this really dry, huge, deep powder. But actually, they only have a 3-week amazing season a year. So you have to get super lucky. Like everyone always says, oh, I want to go and do a season in Japan. I'm like, well, don't go for the season. You've just got to be really adaptive just to when that front comes in, you need to go. But yeah, Japan, I'd really like to do Japan. Otherwise, I mean, it's dumping everywhere in Europe. I'm super content where I am.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
You're in a good place.
But there's also skiing in England and Scotland, and everyone's able to get their little fix. It's just there's more snow for some people and more blue sky.
I've got my skis out my shed. I was saying last week, I've got my skis out my shed, my skins. I'm ready when I'm allowed to go Wales, Scotland.
We were saying, weren't we, Bells? As soon as we're allowed to like travel around the UK, we're going to go to Wales or Scotland or wherever it's snowing.
Even if it's like muddy snow. Oh, thanks so much. It's been the best having you on.
Oh my gosh, well, hey guys, really good job with the podcast.
And oh, give Dougie a hello from me and little Lockie and Cooper.
I will. Okay, so I'm going to do some turns for you.
Thanks a million. I love you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Bye. That was so good to speak to Shem. It actually really cheered me up. It was so nice to see her.
Yeah, she's got the best energy. Really need some of that. So interesting what she's saying about women in sport and it being a male-dominated sport in parts.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally relate. It's definitely been the case for me too. You know when she was saying about how she'll see men judge her, look her up and down on the slopes, and she would then go off and cut them up and show them what's what.
Yeah.
That was a kind of constant battle for me when I was coaching free ride. So perfect example. Okay, how can I explain this best? Okay, so imagine I would stand at Medran, the meeting point in Verbier, where you go up the slopes and wait for a new client, right? And you, Emma, were coming to have an off-piste lesson and you wanted to ski powder, go into dangerous terrain. Obviously, the main thing is safety before technique development and anything else. If you've got two people dressed in the same ski school uniform, one is me and the other is a man in his 40s. Remember at the time I was in my early 20s when I first started doing this, who's French and he's got a big beard. So I am fully qualified, done lots of off-piste training, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got this guy who started skiing 5 years ago and he's done just his first level of qualifications and he's not done much off-piste skiing. Who would you choose?
Having seen so many insane women skiers, I would go for the woman.
Yeah, maybe I'm asking the wrong person. Also, a lot of people that book these off-piste lessons tend to be men. And so they want a man to coach them. They don't want some young girl. You know, the odds were against me. I was a girl. I was young, super young. I was doing this at the age of 21 upwards. And I was British. So all those key factors just don't bode well. And so what I would have to do, right, I remember this one group in particular, but it happened regularly over the years. First of all, they walk up to me and their face drops. I think, oh God. And then I think, this is okay. I know what to do. I've got this. And then I would take them up in the bubble lift. I'd chat to them a bit about their skiing, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll go straight up to the top of Atlas where there's this steep, narrow black run. First thing in the morning is always guaranteed very icy. So it's safe because it's a piste. We're not going off piste yet. So I go, right, I've got to show these boys what's what. So I used to have this little tactic where I would take them straight down this steep, black, icy run. Then by the bottom, you've got men flying everywhere, lost skis. Yeah. And then I just set off at full pelt. I say, right, guys, just use this as a free run. We're not going to jump into technique yet. I would go down, I'd get to the bottom, I'd look up, get down, look up, and then
they'd all just be tumbling down like rag dolls. And then they would sort of go, oh, right, yes. Okay, yes.
She's good.
Yeah, and then once I kind of assessed if they were competent skiers or not, however much they struggled, I would then, my next thing I would do if I thought they could handle it, I mean, it wasn't going to be dangerous to do it, is we'd go straight up to the top of Mont Gelee. Now, you know Mont Gelee because you did Seasons in Verviers. Yeah. How would you explain to our listeners what Mont Gelee is like?
Pretty terrifying. When you come out the top and it's just like a massive drop either side, isn't it? And then, yeah, you can drop down either side. It's just pretty vertical.
And there's no piste runs.
No piste runs, yeah.
All off-piste. And the backside has an itinerary run, which in Switzerland means you can follow these poles and it's not pisted, but at least it's been bombed. It's safe,
yeah.
Essentially. And then on the front, it's just pure off-piste, steep, narrow, rocky couloirs. So you don't ski the front unless you're with a trained guide. So if they were up to it and they still weren't convinced that I was okay, I would then take them straight off to the front side of Mont Gelee. Again, ski down. I actually did this in little sections so I could pick them up rather than having to hike back up the whole couloir if they couldn't do it. Anyway, and that was how I did it. And then after that, they then would start to trust me and take me seriously. But it took that.
So, Baz, how was the process of becoming fully certified and getting your qualifications, working your way up as a female?
I mean, look, I was judged throughout my career right from the start. You know, as I said, girl, young, British. Attending the British system courses, which is with Baysie, being the only girl in the group is often the norm. But for me personally, I actually think that benefited me. It made me raise my game. It made me ski better. I think you're either intimidated by it or you rise the challenge. But yes, so, you know, it's fighting every step of the way. Yes, it's hard, but definitely for sure it made me stronger. You've just got to be dedicated and fight. Yeah. I think you can't, for advice to listeners that are looking to become a ski instructor themselves and their girls, you've got to just make sure you fully commit, you fully dedicate yourself. You know, I would, when I was training, before my lesson started at 9:30 every morning, I would go up at 8:45 when the lifts open with one ski and I would do top to bottom on my own,
really?
On the piste, with one ski, yeah. And I would make myself just every day. And then to start with, it was just skiing the piste, and then I'd build it up and I was skiing the crud or bumps or shitty snow with one ski. So it just makes you technically stronger, technically better. It was also actually a really nice, quiet time and peaceful moment for me in my day.
Really nice. Support for Girls on the Piste comes from Snowfinel.
Snowfinel offers the perfect luxury layers for all life's adventures. The magic of merino wool keeps you comfortable all day whilst temperature regulating in the coldest conditions.
From fine merino base layers to slim fit jumpers, gilets for extra warmth and loads of accessories for men and women, the idea was born out of the need for layering while still looking stylish.
Ensuring the perfect match for all levels of exercise.
Please follow the link in our podcast description to take you to their website. So each week we will do a quick focus on a certain discipline of skiing. And this week we're talking freestyle to get in the zone before we speak to Andy Bennett. Here are our freestyle facts. So freestyle originally encompassed two disciplines, aerials and moguls. Besides those, freestyle skiing now consists of ski cross, half pipe, and slopestyle. So freestyle basically kind of combines skiing and acrobatics. It's been an Olympic medal event since the Albertville Olympics in 1992. The aerial event is pretty breathtaking. Skiers ski straight down the mountain to a jump, which is up to 13 feet high, and perform a variety of twists and somersaults midair, and then they land back on two skis. And moguls, skiers race over moguls up to 4 feet high, as well as jumps, using aggressive turns while keeping their shoulders as parallel to the finish line as possible.
I admire mogul skiers so much because they'll then do the aerial towards the end of their run. We should share for the listeners some amazing professional World Cup mogul comps for them to have a look at on YouTube because they are just so impressive. I prefer doing freestyle in the backcountry. Now, people get very confused with freestyle and free ride. When I say to people my speciality is free ride skiing, they think I'm going to the park and doing exactly what Emma just explained. No, that's freestyle, free ride is backcountry skiing off-piste. My one kind of hero trick is a front flip. I've always struggled. Normally people find a back flip the easiest. I've always struggled with it. I think it's something about forward you can curl, backwards you could just snap your back. Have you tried their Ems?
Can't say I have, actually.
But if you had to, what would you... Have you tried it on a trampoline?
Yeah, I can do a somersault on a trampoline.
Okay, so can you go forward and back?
Yeah.
Do you find it easier going back or forward?
Actually, back, I think.
See, this is what's weird. And actually, talking about trampolining, that is one tool I used to use a lot. In the summer, I would go to trampoline parks in the UK and I would practice movements on the trampolines. Such a safe environment. So if you do want to have a go and explore, it's also super fun and really good fitness. There's one in Acton I used to go to because I live in West London. The one time I did get into freestyle in the park was, you see, at the end of a ski season, there's no off-piste skiing left. That's a really good time to embrace the park. So through April, I would kind of take to that. It's hard. I mean, it's constant battering, landing badly on hard snow. That's why I love the backcountry, doing it off-piste, because you're landing in powder. If you land badly off a trick, doing a trick, you're fine. In the park, it's like concrete. You know, you've got the big kickers and you've got to go in at the right speed. You've got to know how to land. You've got to, you know, if you're trying to pull a three or a five or something, it's just, you know, I would sort of go into these kickers and sort of throw myself off them, chuck my left shoulder round and kind of just hope for the best and spin and land. And, you know, I don't really know how it all happened. And there's rails and boxes.
Yeah. Not something to throw yourself into without the sort of fitness and, you know, the gymnastics training pretty much.
You're so right, though, Ems. A lot of freestyle skiers have trained as children as gymnasts.
So anyway, let's speak to the expert, Andy, who can tell us all about it. Okay, so a little bit of background about Andy. Andy has been a British freestyle ski champion across three disciplines for 5 years in a row and is ranked in the top 15 in the world for men's halfpipe skiing, as well as being the British Masters Ski Cross Champ. He's head of freestyle education for the IASI and is also one of the Team GB free ski coaches. Also, Andy holds a Guinness World Record for backward slalom. We love a Guinness World Record holder on this podcast.
Andy Bennett, welcome to our pod.
Hello, how are we doing?
Hi. So good to see you. It's so nice seeing and speaking to friends in the ski industry.
I don't know when I last saw you, actually. It was going to be a year ago, at least.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
Wait, how come you came up with this idea? Was it boredom or...?
Well, we kind of thought of it in like November or December. We were quite busy working then, but we were just like talking about skiing all the time. We were like, maybe we should do a podcast, because we're talking about podcasts that we like. And then it was kind of a joke. And then Bella was like, yeah, let's actually do it. And then when Bella says, let's do something, it actually happens. Whereas when I say it, it's, yeah, kind of a joke. But actually, it's just happened.
Cool. I listen to them all the time. When did you last ski?
March.
Me too. So I did one level one in Milton Keynes in September, and that's it. So if you've not skied since then, how good are your feet?
My beauty lady, when she comes to my house, she's like, Bella, like pedicures are so easy at the moment for you. And I'm like, she's like, your feet are staying in such good nick. I was like, yeah, no skiing. So that's so funny.
After a summer holiday feet, you know, after a summer holiday when you're hand in the sea.
Oh, yeah.
You're like that all the time now.
That's so funny. You're the first person that said that to me, but it's so true. You obviously coach the Team GB for freestyle, for free skiing. So are the athletes still managing to train, and where are they doing that and how?
Yeah, so there's been a couple of comps. They had, what was it, they had Dubai World Cup in November, and then recently they've just had Kreisberg. So there's been a lot of stuff cancelled as well. I think I read a couple of days ago that Calgary's cancelled. I mean, I just got a brief, and hopefully I'm going out to Livigno to train with them on the 6th of Feb for 2 weeks. And then in my brief, it said, like, only work on the tricks that they've got sorted, and we're not really wanting to learn new tricks because of the uncertainty with the comps and things like that. So they just want to get stuff locked down and ready for if a comp happens, if that makes sense.
Really? Yeah. Right. So, okay.
Because my main role with the team is to get the athletes to learn new tricks. That's what I normally do.
So you're like, okay.
Yeah. So it'd be more like support. So the way that we coach, it's always, the idea is that it's athlete-led, so they will ask you questions or tell you what they want to do, and then you help them
right.
rather than you sort of dictating how they learn and what they're going to do and stuff like that. But the idea is to improve everything that they can already do on this one.
Say to you, I want to do a cork 7. Is that a thing?
Hopefully they wouldn't ask that if they were on the national team. So that's
okay, what do they ask? What's like a cool trick that someone might want to learn?
A cork 7 was good when I was doing it, and that's going back about 15
years. Oh, really? Yeah. That's showing my age. Come on then, what's like the ultimate trick all the cool kids are trying to do at the moment?
Kirsty, who, this is bad if I can't remember, she's around 15 years of age.
Right.
And she's doing double 12s. So a double cork 12.
What?
So a 1260 rotation with two going upside down twice. That's what they're.
What? God. That's madness, isn't it? So what age do you coach? What age do they start kind of, you know, training properly?
Yeah, I would say, you know, 14, 15.
How did you get into freestyle when you started, Andy?
Well, we're going back a long time here. So it was a bit different. So I call it a real sport now. So it's more serious. So you have coaches, for example. I remember when I was doing World Cup, it was unusual to have a coach. And that wasn't just, you know, the GB or small, like Netherlands, smaller non-Alpine nations. Some of the big Alpine nations didn't have coaches.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that competed in moguls and what is called free ski now. So they did both. A lot of sort of came through that way. So if you go back to like 1998, I think it was, that's when twin tips were first sort of commercially available. If you remember the Salomon 1080 ski, that yellow, it's either yellow or orange. So around that time, that's when people started doing competitions on twin tips. So they were still sort of in the mogul scene a little bit and were doing the new stuff as well. That's kind of what I did. I was a bump skier. I have a short attention span and always kind of want to do the newest, coolest thing. And I don't stick at things as long as some people would. So when twin tips came out, I wanted to go do that. And I was always in mogul skiing. My weakness was on the ground, actually. I mean, I've not been involved for a long, long time. But at the time, it was 50% of your score was on your technique, so your turns, and 25% was on your time, and 25% was on your jumps. And I would score quite well on the time and the jumps, but my turns weren't very good. So always being comfortable in the air when twin tips came out and it was just go and do a jump. That was cool.
It was a natural progression for you.
So I went and did that. And there was a little bit more, because it was a new emerging sport, there was a little bit more investment in it as well. So like sponsors and magazines and things, that's where all the money and glamour was and kudos and credit. It was so it's pretty, for someone who's 18, 19, you know, it's pretty attractive to jump ship and go do that sort of stuff.
And you were British champion three disciplines, which is so impressive, big air, slopestyle and halfpipe. What was your favourite?
On paper, it sounds good, like British champion in all these disciplines and stuff, but it wasn't that competitive. It was basically like, at the time, it was like me and my mates, you know, and sometimes someone else would win and then the next year, you know, you might win or whatever.
You're far too modest, though. Like, you always play stuff down. You're a bloody good skier and, you know, you're obviously naturally talented, especially the way you just went to these comps and there weren't even coaches in those days.
We did have a little bit, but it wasn't paid. The coaches were volunteers. And I remember I was at the World Cup halfpipe in Saas Fee and again, it's fine. Everybody behaves very, very differently now. But I remember a really good friend of mine as well, Coach Simon, and he set fire to the American team coaches in the popcorn bar with flaming sambucas. It was great fun.
So you were also a coach on the jump.
Yeah.
Who did you love coaching? And end? When did you do it? How many years did you do it?
The jump program, yeah, that was hilarious. I was used more for the jumping part. So not the traditional ski jump bit, but they had airbags where they would learn to actually take off.
Right.
They had like ski across and things like that where they had to tackle jumps and stuff like that. So they would use me for that. And then I think one year actually they did have a sort of mogul run as well. So I had to coach on that as well. But yeah, I did the general snowplow stuff. So before the celebrities go out to the mountains, they have to learn in the snow dome first.
Yeah, because so they literally can't ski, can they? Some can, some can't.
Yeah. Some had skied for a while, some had never seen a pair of skis. And basically to get signed off to be able to go out to the mountains to continue with the program, they had to be able to use the lift and get from the top of the snow dome to the bottom safely.
Who was your favourite to coach?
My favourite was Robbie Fowler, the footballer. And it was because he was just, you know, he obviously didn't need to get on the TV to get money or anything like that. He was there purely to he saw it as an opportunity to get better at skiing or learn to ski, because footballers weren't allowed to ski when they were professionals because broken leg isn't good. And he'd got friends that went on ski holidays and he wanted to be able to go with them. And he was just so determined to get better and just tried really hard and, yeah, was really into it.
And obviously it's been off the TV now for a few years. Do you think they'll ever do it again?
I've got no idea.
And you've got the Guinness World Record for skiing switch, which is skiing backwards for those of you who don't know. Can you tell us a bit about this?
It's a really funny story, actually. So again, it's great to have a record and it's in the 2010 book, which is hilarious. Nice. But I think it's one of those obscure records that the reason it's not being beaten is because it's that weird. There was a program and it was on Sky One, and we did this at Milton Keynes Snow Dome. Can't remember how I got roped into doing it, but it was a program called Guinness World Record Smashed on Sky One. This is back in 2010. They got myself and Eddie the Eagle and a guy called James Machen, who at the time was on the GB halfpipe team, and he went to the Sochi Olympics.
Right.
And basically, they set up a slalom course and we had to race backwards down it. And I won and got the winning time. So got the record. It was very, very entertaining.
You get yourself into some really interesting random things.
I really want Eddie the Eagle to come on this podcast. That'd be so good.
Yeah.
You and the Eagle, like two completely different people just hanging out doing this random challenge.
Yeah, and it was the TV presenter was me. She was a Blue Peter presenter.
Oh, yeah, Connie.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, she was doing the presenting for it. And it was funny, like the three of us up there. And then you have to, if you imagine, like, you know, when you come out a start gate for a slalom race, imagine how silly it looks going out the gate backwards.
Okay, let's talk ski modelling, because I've done that with you for, what, 3 or 4 years? And it's such a laugh.
You make it a laugh, Bella.
Oh, you stop that. But for the listeners, Andy is really annoying in the fact that he nails the shot first time, every time. So there's me being told by the photographer to re-hike and re-hike and re-hike. And that is bloody tiring. So there's Andy just chilling out on his next change, because you're changing, what, 8-10 outfits a day, is it?
Yeah, you should probably say this is for the Ellis Brigham catalogue.
Yes, this is for the Ellis Brigham catalogue, for the white stuff. White stuff, the white book.
The white book for Ellis Brigham.
The white book. And anyway, so there's me bloody lapping whilst Andy's just chuckling at the bottom. Can you explain, for those that don't know, what ski modelling is actually like? Because it's not skiing, is it?
No, it's hike up in your change of clothes, do one turn. If you're good, you can do it in one turn.
If you're better, you do it in 10.
Go and get changed and go back up again. And it's not glamorous, you know, you get changed in the snow. I don't know, do we do 8 changes a day, something like that?
Something like that. You're quite right, it's not glamorous. You're in and out of, and the pain with changing outfits so much is your ski boots. You've got to whack your ski boots on off, especially when it's cold.
Well, that's the thing with Pam, like, she, because Pam's a hardcore skier, and she's got like race boots with zip fit liners and whatnot, and you know, probably a size too small,
yeah,
very stiff boots. it's not good in cold getting changed in an hour. Like, go no. get slippers that clip into some bindings.
Yeah, I'm in like really soft boots. Yeah, I think there's been a few times where I've literally been in the snow trying to force her foot back into her boot. Yeah.
All right, so last question, Andy, that we ask everyone. If you could teleport anywhere in the world right now to ski, where would you go?
Probably choose Scotland or anywhere in the UK, because you can check that it's got good snow and then be there.
That's Whereas, true.
How many times have you gone to Scotland and it's been terrible?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You can predict. It's a novelty factor. Having an amazing day in the UK is very, very special because it never happens. So,
it's
yeah,
so rare.
I think, yeah, teleport. Did you see there was a video of a guy on Snowdonia a few days ago?
Oh, it was mad. Amazing.
Yeah, it looks incredible.
It was a headcam video.
Mental. I like that. I've probably only had maybe 2 mega days skiing in Scotland in my life. And as you say, it's such a novelty and it's so cool doing it on home turf.
A lot of people are at the moment.
I've never done it.
We'll have to do it. Do a day out. And Andy?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Oh, well, thanks so much. It's been so interesting hearing about freestyle. And Ems, I think we need to try and get a lot cooler.
We do.
Very quickly. Oh, so good to see you. And thanks so much again. And love to your family. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Well, look, take care. Cool.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
All right. Alps update. A quick rundown of ski resort news to finish this episode up with, as a number of things have happened this week. Frustratingly for us in the UK, the snow conditions across the Alps look incredible. And in Scotland, actually, there's been some huge snowstorms which have actually closed some resorts that are not closed anyway due to COVID. Sadly, these snow conditions have actually led to many avalanches and very tragically, lives were lost this week. So our thoughts are very much with those affected. In terms of ski lifts opening up, it's all a bit bleak on that front for this winter until mid-February at least. The French government said on Wednesday that ski lifts opening February is highly unlikely. The German and Italian governments have confirmed in the past week they won't allow ski areas to open until at least mid-February. Ski areas in Andorra and Austria are open, but only to local people. Austria also has recently announced it's not reopening to ski tourism until at least February the 8th. And like France says, in reality, it will most likely be March at the earliest. And Switzerland, lastly, remains open for ski tourism.
So, all in all, pretty great stuff.
Yeah, great.
No, in all seriousness, look, we know if this season is a write-off, you've just got to stay positive and look towards what your first ski trip's going to be when you can, even if it's next winter.
Yeah, positive vibes.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Please contact us by email at girlsonthepiste@gmail.com. We'd love to know who you want us to bring on as a special guest and what you want us to talk about. Please subscribe to the pod wherever you are listening. Rate us and write a review to help us get the word out.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, bye, bye. Bye, 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 bye. Bye.
Support for Girls on the Piste comes from Snow Fennel.
Snow Fennel offers the perfect luxury layers for all life's adventures. The magic of merino wool keeps you comfortable all day whilst temperature regulating in the coldest conditions.
From fine merino base layers to slim fit jumpers, gilets for extra warmth and loads of accessories for men and women, the idea was born out of the need for layering while still looking stylish.
Ensuring the perfect match for all levels of exercise.
Please follow the link in our podcast description to take you to their website.